You know, I can't hear Blustery without thinking of Winnie the Pooh. I just can't.
I play that sometimes when it's Wednesday, because Wednesday was the blustery day.
Right.
Oh, bother.
Right. I'm a grown man, for all intents and purposes, but every time I hear blustery, I'm back in Pooh Corner, and that's not fair.
I don't like that corner.
It's a dangerous corner. Very dangerous. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and yeah, it's really rainy, but deal with it. It'll be okay. It'll be sunny soon.
Better than snowy.
I think it is better than snowy. And baseball is just a few days away. Major League Baseball will be played on Sunday night for the Cubs and then on Monday afternoon for the White Sox. So there's that.
It's finally happened.
It's finally happened. We get some baseball. Did you see the controversy? Donald Trump was elected president, Wendy. Did you see this in
when
the paper?
When did that happen?
That happened a
Where
few
was
months
I?
Ago. Oh, yeah. It was in all the papers. And it is a tradition since the days of William Howard Taft that the president throws out the first pitch. Like, he goes out to the ballpark on opening day, and everybody goes, ladies and gentlemen, the president, and then he waves, and then he throws out the pitch. And Donald Trump will not be doing that this weekend.
I heard that, but why again?
Well, he says it's because of scheduling conflicts. He says that he had something prior. They won't say what it is, but he has a prior commitment, so he cannot go to opening day. Now, since the Nationals came into the world of baseball, the Washington Nationals, they have been the one that has hosted the president. Prior to that, it was almost always the Baltimore Orioles, but not always, because that's the closest one to Washington, D.C. Now, of course, it's the Washington Nationals. But regardless of that, for the last about 100 years, on opening day, the president shows up and throws out the pitch. Not this time.
I know why.
I bet your guess is the same exact guess as mine. What's your guess?
He doesn't seem like he'd do a good job doing throwing out a pitch. Perhaps he's not athletically inclined. He has little hands. How can he hold the ball? So I think he's worried about not doing it well.
There's footage of him. You know, sometimes they'll just have a celebrity. Prior to his being president, he was a celebrity. He was a famous guy. So there's footage of him attending other ball games and throwing out a pitch, and it's awkward at best. He has no athletic prowess when it comes to throwing a baseball. Zero.
And you know what? Many people don't. I'm not
right.
knocking him for that, but I kind of admire his ability to say, I'm busy, I can't do it, because he does not like to look bad in the eyes of anyone.
See, that's...
I disagree with you guys.
What do you disagree... What is your take on it?
I think one of his strengths or weaknesses is that he doesn't recognize what he doesn't do badly.
Right.
Or how he looks, right? I mean... On the day health care was being voted on, he was pretending to drive a Mack truck.
Right,
and
that was cute.
Right? So that's not worried about appearance so much.
Yeah. But don't you think, like, all right, so here's the way it plays out, is the hosting team, in this case the Washington Nationals, sends a note to the White House saying, hey, don't forget, opening day is coming, and as always, we request the president show up to the game. So then they decline. They say the president already has a prior commitment. He cannot do it. I think it's because they know it's something of a PR nightmare for him to show up at a Major League Baseball game and get booed like crazy.
That
Don't you
happen.
Think?
Sure. Because that happens to everyone.
That does, absolutely.
Even the popular presidents
right.
get booed.
So we're not picking on President Trump.
Right.
I just don't think... You're right. Driving the truck was... But it was... He wasn't real... He was just goofing around. This is like... I think this would be the biggest fear of anyone throwing out a first pitch, is to make sure you get it over the plate.
Right. Well, the first pitch isn't always... I mean, sometimes they'll do a thing. Like, the footage they have of him is he's actually standing, like, in the... he's in the crowd, and he just tosses it on the field.
Oh, that's
it? That. Now, normally, what you just described is the way it goes down, but it doesn't always have to. They can just kind of sit in a box and toss it onto the field.
Well,
I've seen that done.
What fun is that?
You can, yeah. It's just it's ceremonial.
I guess. I don't know. He loves to have these rallies. I'm surprised he doesn't want to do it.
Right.
I'm just thinking I wouldn't do it because I wouldn't make it over the plate. I'd have to stand like right in front of the plate.
They move you way up.
I know, but still,
they move you way up. And actually, I've heard from people, like our friend Jimmy Pardo has been on the show. He threw out a first pitch at White Sox Park. And I've talked to other people who have done these ceremonial first pitches. They even say to you, how close are you comfortable? Like, it's never on the mound. I don't think I've ever seen a guy who's not a Major League Baseball player throw out the first pitch from the mound and get a strike. That just doesn't happen. So they move it up 20 feet or 30 feet, and they go, are you good with that? Another 5 feet, another 10 feet.
You know what I would do, and somebody can steal this idea, and perhaps it's been done, stand on the mound, on the bump, if you will, and wind up like you're going to throw a pitch and then run up about 30 feet and then bink.
Who purposely, was it Will Ferrell? Somebody purposely a couple years ago threw it like wildly into the stands, like didn't even come close, but on purpose.
That's the way to do it, too,
right.
So that you don't have to worry about getting
right.
it. That's got to be a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah. All those eyes on you? Yeah.
Why don't you do it? Why don't we get
I've
you
never
to
been
do
asked.
It? Would you
I
do
would
it?
I would do it. Yeah, I would be happy to do it. I've never
How
been
How long
asked.
Would you practice beforehand?
Weeks. I would want to be I would
I know,
want to be the guy
it.
Who did it from the mound. But you can't believe I pitched a little bit in Little League. Like, if you go from not pitching at all to throwing hard, it really screws up your arm. You can't believe how much it messes with your arm.
You sound
so
like
I would
a baby.
Need, I would need 6 to 8 weeks of prep time just for the one pitch.
Well, let's try and work that out.
All right. All right. I can't do the one in Washington. Prior commitments.
Yeah, I know. You're a busy man.
Wouldn't you, like, to make this even slightly believable, wouldn't you add a little more detail to that? They're just saying he's got something. He can't.
Well, he doesn't have to be transparent. He can just...
Right.
He has to wash his hair that day.
Right. I bet there's a baseball game in Russia that day he has to attend.
Well, now that was too much. You've crossed the line. The red line.
The red line. Right. I have. All right. There's so much on today's show, everybody. Jonathan Pitts, we mentioned, is the director of the Chicago Improv Festival. Started out small and innocent, and who knew what it would become. It's the biggest improv festival in the world. He has announced, by the way, we'll talk about this with him, that this is the end of the line for him. He is calling it quits after this year's festival, which is very sad news because he puts on quite a show. So he'll be with us at 10:35. Dean Richards later on to talk about new movies, and then there's all kinds of other stuff. We're thrilled that you're here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're talking about the ceremonial first pitch. This has been done for 100 years. Started with William Howard Taft. Remember him, Wendy? William Howard Taft. He threw out the first pitch. People loved it. They said, let's do this every opening day. So every president has done this, but wait, not this weekend. Donald Trump says, too busy. I've got a scheduling conflict.
So he seriously is the only president to decline.
Yeah.
That just seems wrong.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, he likes to be in the news. I cannot reach my phone, Bill.
No. Well, how can I help you?
Let's talk to James.
All right. James?
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Now, you have done this. Have you thrown out a first pitch at some point?
Yeah. July the 4th, 2013. I was still on active duty. I'm retired Navy now.
Yeah.
And make a long story short, I was invited to throw the opening pitch because I received the Bronze Star when I was in Afghanistan.
Oh, congratulations,
wow.
And thank you. That's amazing.
Thank you. And anyway, so I was invited to go down, and about a week before, I got horrible bloody pneumonia, and they didn't know where it came from and so on and so forth. And so my wife was saying, well, you got a this and that, and I said, I am throwing that pitch. My buddy flew in from... Portsmouth, Virginia. I'm in my dress, whites, and I was just terrified that I'd get something on my uniform. Now, what was really cool is why it's such an honor just to do it in the first place. But my dad was in the Korean War, and he received the Bronze Star. And when they were getting some background on me, I sent the picture out, and they on the board they had my picture getting the Bronze Star, and then they showed a picture of my dad. And it just brought tears to my eyes.
That's so cool.
That is.
That's excellent.
And did you get dirt on your whites?
Only the bottoms of my shoes.
That's not bad. James, did you throw it? You didn't throw it from the mound, right? You moved up a little bit, didn't you?
Oh, no. I threw it from the mound, man. You get on the Sun Times had a huge picture. They called it Game Face because I had the look. And I threw it as hard as I could, but I didn't get across the plate. But
in the vicinity,
it
though?
Would have been a, say again?
Was it in the vicinity? Were you close enough?
I was close enough. And if it would have gone across the plate, it would have been in the strike zone.
Wow. So that's 60 feet, 6 inches. That's not bad. Who was the White Sox catcher who caught it? Do you remember?
I can't remember his name, but he was a red-haired guy from Texas.
And what year was this?
I'm
trying to remember who that might have been.
It was 2013. He was
so just
catcher.
A few years ago. Who would that have been, Wendy? Does that ring a bell with you? Redhead from Texas. Was he their starting catcher, do you know, or did they have their backup?
I believe he was a backup.
Backup. All right, we'll look it up because I'm just curious. But that's a pretty good showing. Congratulations, James.
Thanks very much.
Well done. And thanks for your service, certainly, and all you achieved. That's amazing.
Well, it is. And I'm retired now. I'm back into school full time, and I call you guys a lot because, I'm looking for a job.
Well, the White Sox could use some pitching, James. It sounds like you've got the accuracy down.
I'm too old for that, man.
All right.
I'm too old for that.
Well, good luck. I hope get a job soon.
Oh, it'll work out.
I know
guys,
it will.
Have a great day.
All right. Hang in there. Thanks so much,
bye.
James.
Thank you. I don't know who that pitcher was.
He did it from the mound. White
or
Sox
catcher,
right? Some from 3 years ago, a redheaded catcher from Texas. He was their backup. I'm trying to think of who that might have been. I would only do it if Bill Naharodny was the catcher. I want him to catch. Maybe Ron Karkovice. Maybe.
Karko.
Or a walrus that looks enough like him.
I did it at Wrigley.
Did you really?
Yeah. To Eric Yelding.
I remember Eric Yelding.
Yeah. Backup catcher.
Mostly outfielder, though, right? Didn't he sometimes catch, but mostly an outfielder?
He did some catching, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
All right, the 2013 roster of our Chicago White Sox. Brian Anderson, Tyler Flowers, Hector Jimenez, Miguel Gonzalez, and Josh Fegley.
Those were all catchers for the White Sox that
year?
Yeah,
but I don't know who has red hair. This would be a great Jeopardy question.
Right. White Sox catchers for 300, Alex? Tom has also done. It seems like everybody we know now has thrown out a first pitch, but you and me, Wendy.
I don't want to.
No,
I want to catch. If you throw it,
right.
I would catch.
All right,
Tom, what'd you do?
Back in 2004, and I got invited through a work sponsor, MasterCard, to throw out the first pitch. I was very excited. Went home, told everybody, told my dad, told my neighbors. They all gave you the same advice. Whatever you do, don't throw it in the dirt.
Right.
And, solid.
So my neighbor Bill went and got the pitch back out of his garage and set it up 60 feet, 6 inches in our backyard so we could practice. And what I developed a pitch that was a high looping arc that went right over the plate. So, you don't try to burn it in. That's the biggest mistake. The guy before me that was throwing the pitch threw it in the dirt. He was trying to throw a changeup, I think, and which was very embarrassing for him.
Can
mine
I tell you?
Went right over the plate, but about 16 feet in the air.
I went to school on you because same thing. I threw it with such an arc that the picture of me from the catcher's viewpoint of me on the mound throwing it,
yeah,
the baseball's not even in the picture.
Wow. But you could, having done this, Tom, you have to admit, if you don't warm up a little bit and practice this a little bit, you will blow your arm out in one pitch, right?
No,
not in one pitch.
I've seen people do it.
Don't throw it hard.
Just go a little bit softer than you think.
Yeah, like you're throwing it from left field. I mean, it's a big looping arc.
That first day, like I played Little League for a bunch of years, so that first day, that first practice, your arm hurts for the next week. Because you're not used to that throwing motion is just so foreign.
My son was just at the last season of his little league career, started pitching and did pretty well. And then I'm like, boy, he should have looked at that before.
Yeah.
He didn't complain about his arm at
all.
Nothing.
Every year, that first practice.
And then you get used to it?
The next week. Yeah. Yeah, it takes a couple of weeks, but yeah.
You better practice for like 3 months before you do it.
Now, no one's going to ask me, but I'm going to start practicing now.
Tom, some good tips there. Don't, because you want a little more control rather than speed on this thing, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and with all your friends and family watching, you just don't want to be embarrassed. That's the number one incentive.
I would keep shaking off signals from the catcher. Like I would just keep looking at him, going, "No, not a fastball, curveball, no slider, no changeup, no."
Thank you so much, Tom. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Now, you were saying people aren't throwing it from the mound all the time. Anthony, you have some information for us?
Yeah, I believe George Bush Jr. threw from the rubber following the 9/11 terrorist attack. He was on the mound. I think it was Game 3 of the World Series way back when.
Really? And he didn't throw a strike, did he?
He threw it right down the middle, and I remember I watched a little documentary on it. Derek Jeter had said, "Don't bounce it in; they'll boo you off the mound." And he goes, "Oh, wonderful! That's wonderful. I have no nerves whatsoever now."
And he tossed a strike. That's amazing.
Yeah, you YouTube it. It's pretty cool.
All right, I'll find it.
Sort of a momentous event after those attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a powerful appearance. But do you remember back in the 70s or so, they would throw the first pitch from the stands?
Yeah,
that's what
Bill
was saying,
earlier.
And I never heard that, really.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I know it's ceremonial, but I thought you had to be on the field for it.
No, I think the field part is new.
Yeah, you weren't alive for that. Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, well, have a good one.
You as well.
Bye.
And really quickly, and then we have to take a break. Ryan, your last comment on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to help you guys out with some more history. Barack Obama, actually, in his 8 years, only threw out the pitch once, and it wasn't his first year. He did it in 2010. And so it's something that every president has done, but it's not every year for the past.
Oh, really? I keep reading that it's an annual tradition.
Yeah, no, they skip it a lot. Even George Bush, who loved baseball, he skipped it a few times as well.
He doesn't just love baseball. He was the owner of the Rangers for the while.
Did
for
he
a little
play,
while.
Too, when he was younger?
And his father played for the Yale baseball team. So, I mean, baseball ran deep in their family.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for that, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Take care.
I get my bushes mixed up.
Sure. Talk to Tony Fulmer. He's a horticulturist. He'll help you. We must take a break, everybody. News is next, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you and I have been having Jonathan Pitts in for years and years and years. Jonathan is the reason
we've had the Pitts.
That's what we say. That's what our billboards
that
will
at
say.
All in grammar school.
You
before.
Really did. Never, I know. Never, I'm never. So original. I know.
But this year is sweeter because Jonathan has brought in an incredible collector's heirloom. How would you describe this, Jonathan? Because the words don't even come to me. How would you describe
they
this?
They are a unique limited edition wristband.
Yes.
That was made in America. That
yes.
has the colors of our organization, which is red and black, and a
beautiful.
Swirl put together. And there was only 1,000 made.
Oh. We are so lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't even guess what it like because Wendy and I are going to put these on eBay as soon as you leave. I can't even imagine what the price will get is for these. It's
99
incredible.
Cents
about
maybe.
That.
Yeah.
I'm
$1.
Wearing mine, so it has
so,
my DNA
yeah, right.
on it.
That's
so.
Got a higher value.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
All right. This is the 20th anniversary of the Chicago Improv
wow.
Festival. Let's go back in time 20 years when you started this. When you started this,
yes.
nobody knew how big this thing would become, and it has become the largest improv festival in the world. Am I right?
Yes, that's very true. Yes. I got nothing to say on top of just yes.
Well, go back to 20 years. What were you thinking? Like, what
well, 20
did you
years,
think it
the
would
biggest
have?
Improv festival in America was in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And it was called the Big Stinking Improv Festival. And I was like, why is the biggest improv festival in America in Austin, Texas?
Out right. of all places.
Right, because we're the birthplace, the Mecca, you know. And so at the time, I was like, also, Chicago loves festivals.
Yes.
We are a festival city. So I was like, the two should be combined together. And that's when I was like, we should do the Chicago Improv Festival and make the biggest improv festival here because it matches the history of Chicago being the birthplace of it.
Yep.
It matches Chicago's ability and love to transform things into other things. I mean, we take a flat pizza and make it thick. We take a small baseball and make it a 16-inch softball.
Right.
We take country blues and electrify
yes.
it. So it makes sense that we are the ones who'll say, we don't need a script to create theater.
Mm-hmm.
We can just make this up as we go.
Who were some of your first people that were involved in the first annual?
Well, in the first year, Jeff Garland was in it. We also had Slotnick Katz and Lear, Joey Slotnick
yeah.
From, you know, Friends and stuff like that. We also had people that know – we had Upright Citizens Brigade just before they
loved
started
them.
Shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, for those that don't know, that is Amy Poehler's group.
Mm-hmm.
And
they did okay.
Yeah, they did all right.
They did all
right. A little something-something.
Right.
You know? And then there were people that were performing that no one knew at the time were somebody, but they were people like Jack McBrayer, who was like with different groups who then would go on to become
30
things.
30 Rock?
Yes. You know, Seth Meyers, mm-hmm. you know, Rachel Dratch. We had all these people that were just part of the community back then that are now part of the larger, much larger cultural thing. You know, like our third year, we had Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key, and they were just separate. They were Jordan, you know, it was just like, it was an astonishing time 20 years ago because all the people that were around here are so at the forefront culturally of the comedic and entertainment world.
I hope you're proud of this. You have to be. I mean, really, you took something that was so small and so foreign and just made it the thing to do every spring.
Well, yeah, I am proud of it.
You should be.
It's been a lot of work, and it's like anything else at 20 years. Sometimes it feels very short. Other days it felt really long.
Just like kids.
Right. Yeah. And people have joked, like, you know, this being the 20th year and my last year, it's like I'm sending the festival out to get its own apartment.
Get out of my basement, right. Festival.
Get out of here.
Was it with mixed emotions that you made the decision that this year, the 20th year, would be your final? I bet it was a hard
thing. I wish I could say it was, but it wasn't.
It wasn't? No.
I am the belief that, like, if you don't leave something at the right time, that's when bitterness shows up.
No.
You're right.
Yeah.
You really are.
Yeah. And so for me, I am ready.
Yeah.
And if I stick around past this, you know, my nightmare scenario would be like, I'm a 65-year-old man going, all right, kids, get up and play. Just, I don't care. Just do something. And, and to me, the challenge of middle age is to not become bitter.
Right.
That, I think, is the largest challenge of, you know, those of us that are in this age.
Right. Too late for you, Bill.
I know. Whatever. That's fine. Those first few years, because you were kind enough, you'd have me come in and a lot of times I would MC on our main stage. The opening show was sometimes right. The closing show. So those opening venues were very small and intimate, and I know some of them still are. But now you're doing shows at the Anthony.
We do
Theater.
At the main stage. Like, we have Dan Harmon coming in with Harmontown.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's already sold 600 seats out of the 985. So
let's tell people, if they don't know who Dan Harmon is, he's the creator of some very, very funny TV shows.
Yeah, he's the creator. He's an Emmy Award winning TV producer, creator. He created Community.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, if you love comedy, he does an animated show of Dungeons and Dragons that's improvised, where they just play Dungeons and Dragons and then they take that and then they animate it.
Very funny.
Kevin, you would love that. Kevin plays Magic the Gathering. Is it close to Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, it's kind of in that vein, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you.
But a local guy, a Columbia College kid, I believe, right?
A guy named Scott Adsit, who is known for people for 30 Rock and also the voice of Big Hero 6. Our little Scott Adsit has been part of an Emmy Award-winning show, an Oscar-winning movie. Mm-hmm. He won the Joseph Jefferson Award when he was here, and I'm giving him a CIF Spotlight Award because I feel like that should top the
other
deserved. Awards. Yes.
Yeah.
But he's done so many things for CIF. He was in our first ever festival. I put together in the first year a special show with him and Dave Pasquese and Mick Napier, and they all performed together. And it was an amazing, amazing show. And Scott has always said yes to just about anything I've ever asked him to do.
Yeah.
So he's been such a friend to the festival. And that's why I was like, I want to give him an award in my 20th year to show the spotlight of my gratitude for what he's done for the festival and for me. So,
well deserved. He and I were friends in college, and I have not talked to him in years, but I always love his work. Anytime I see him in anything, he's always really good. Very talented guy.
Yeah, and he's a very nice person too.
Yeah. Isn't he?
Yeah.
What is it about Chicago that we love these kind of shows?
I think it's just something about the hustle and bustle of Chicago. Like I said, we're a city, you know, the phrase, we're the city on the make. We transform things. I mean, it makes sense to me that the birth of the atom bomb was here. That's just another transformation.
Look at you. How many times have you said this? Because you're laying this down really smoothly.
But it's true.
It is true.
You know, like, this is what we do. How many times has Chicago rebuilt itself?
Yeah.
You know, from every crisis and every fire and every, you know, it's been at least five or six different rebuildings. That means we're a constant city that's always transforming. And so when you always have this transformational energy in the city, in the people, it makes sense that its entertainment would be the same.
Do you think maybe we're creative here because we need to be creative here? Because the weather's against us and the sports teams are almost always against
yes,
us.
Yes, for a long time.
So we're forced.
But now in global warming and with the Cubs winning, we're going to become fat and happy.
And not funny anymore.
No. No, not at all.
Those days are over. Yeah. Now's the time to step down.
That's
Your timing is perfect.
Because about 5 years from now, everyone's just going to be like, why are we not winning more?
Right. Jonathan Pitts is here from the Chicago Improv Festival. If they want more information, Jonathan, their best bet is to do what?
Go to chicagoimprovfestival.org.
Perfect. We'll take a quick break and then more. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Jonathan Pitts is in studio with Wendy and myself. Jonathan is the guy who has made the Chicago Improv Festival what it is for the past 20 years. Jonathan, do me a favor. Let's go over this. It's not just Chicago Improv Group. It's not just improv groups around America. It's global.
Yep.
We've had groups from everywhere, all
yeah.
corners of the
In our 20-year history, we've had 27 different countries here. It's one of the things I am proud of is that Chicago Improv Festival has been an international arts festival. It's been great to bring the improv world to Chicago.
Yeah.
And then, you know, be able to create those bridges and have Chicago create the relationships with people around the world. And it's really wonderful to watch improvisers from other countries, even if they don't speak the same language, because everyone's had the same training of yes and.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways of, it's like a shared language, a shared vocabulary, that then even if you don't speak the same language, you can still play together.
The rules of improv
yeah.
are pretty much the same no matter where in the
yep.
world you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all based on agreement and building and listening.
My son, Michael, is a senior at LT High School and never really was involved in the improv club there until senior year and decided to do it. And he learned so much in that 1 year. A lot
right.
of the kids had done it all 4 years, so they were better at it. But
right.
I never took improv. I didn't know you're supposed to take an idea and continue it. I thought you could twist it, and I learned so much working with Bill.
Sure. And that's part of the amazing rapport you guys have, and that's why I love listening to your show.
Oh, thank you.
And that's why, you know, I've always loved Bill as a comic, because he's not only a really good stand-up comic, he also really is ingrained in improvisation. When I've seen him interact with audiences, he takes the moment and builds off it. There's very little that an audience doesn't throw at him that he can't just spin around and make look like he was having a conversation with them.
Oh, you're so nice.
You do it every day.
Thank you. Yeah. It's to you. Thank you.
But yeah. it amazes me how quick he is, and I've gotten better working with him because I have to keep up.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things is that when people first start doing improv, they often think they have to think of an answer, when there's more, it's just listening. And then
that is key.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like interviewing someone, too. You
right.
can have a page of questions written out for someone, but you got to listen to what their response is, because
yep.
maybe you'll blow off all those questions and
right.
just have a conversation.
Because you're like, wait a minute, let's go back to that axe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Do me a favor. For people who don't know about improv, you said the phrase yes and, which is the law of
yeah,
improv.
Yeah, the golden rule.
But what that means exactly for people who are not ingrained in it is what?
Well, the yes means that you are in agreement. You are hearing what has been said and you're accepting it. You know, rather than automatically fighting over it like a lawyer
mm-hmm.
over the very basics of it.
You just accept it.
Yeah. The yes is, yes, I hear that. Yes, that has been said. That has been done. This is that moment. That is the yes. I'm
right.
not going to fight you on it. That's the yes. The and is how you build off of it, how you add something to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think it should be yes, add, rather than yes, and.
That's good.
Because
that's true.
Yeah, because the yes and can almost be like a sideways move, but the yes add is that you are always adding something. And part of what makes improv so exciting is like what Wendy does when she responds is unique to Wendy. And what you say is unique to you. And that's what's so exciting about watching different people improvise is nobody else can do what that person is bringing. It's almost like a whole different symphony of different jazz musicians, each who play the saxophone slightly differently based on who they are.
Yeah.
So it then comes down to the rapport, and it comes down to the trust and the sense of fun and listening. And who doesn't like having fun with someone who's listening to you?
Okay, but the trust thing is
yes.
key.
Yes.
And, you know, so what happens when you're put with someone for the very first time and you don't know if you can trust them?
There's
yet?
Two people you have to trust in any given scene, and you are one of them. So if you know that you can trust yourself,
yeah.
you can cover the distance. And then, because you know you can take care of yourself, that's your confidence, that's your trust within yourself. But if you put all your trust in the other person, that means you're not trusting yourself.
Look at you. You're like a yogi.
You're a guru.
You're like a Zen master.
So it's like when you trust yourself, it makes it
yeah.
easier to trust the other
that's
person.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then when you get anything and you know no matter what they do, I can do something with it. that gives you the trust and confidence. And then as you start, you know, then you get the same sort of chemistry, because chemistry is, again, people intertwining and sharing and listening, which is, again, what you guys have, because that's why you guys are so wonderful together. It's the chemistry.
Thank you, Jonathan.
But when I first was paired with you, Bill,
you gave us this, and now the compliments.
Yeah, the wristbands.
The wristbands and now the compliments.
Yeah, they're gaining in value as I'm talking.
When they paired us together, I had worked with a bunch of different partners, and they brought you in. And honestly, that first night was like, this is pretty magical. You can't create... Can you create chemistry? I don't know that you can really create it. It's got to click.
Chemistry, of course, is a different thing. You know, I don't think you can create chemistry. Chemistry is either there or not. But you can create scenes with other people. You can create, you know, using the yes ad, you can create dialogue with anyone.
Yeah.
Whether or not that becomes something that you want to do all the time is a completely different thing. But through yes ad and listening and responding and sharing and listening all the way, not just halfway through the sentence, but listening to the end of the sentence, and how, like, Bill's nodding his head right now. That's additional information. The way you guys are both looking at me, that's additional information. Taking that all in and letting that land inside you, that's where you respond from.
I just got an improv lesson. My improv is best, and Bill, you can attest to this, when I'm in the elevator with strangers,
oh, yeah,
and I cannot let it be quiet. I have to talk to them. And all they do is push buttons trying to get off and escape me. That's my best improv in the elevator.
And Wendy says scene. When we get to the floor that he's going to, she says scene, and they go,
well, you know, Wendy,
over.
Next year for the 21st Chicago Improv Festival, and I'm no longer producing, I can recommend you to the producer. Maybe you can do the elevator show.
All right.
Nice.
Small audience, of course.
Well, a lot of shows are.
I want to go back a couple of years to a special moment for me anyway, and I hope it is for you. There's a guy named Avery Schreiber, and people may know him for a thousand different things. He was paired with another actor named Jack Burns,
right,
and they were a tremendous comedy team for years. He was the Doritos guy for years on television. You brought him back to do what ended up being his last show. I hosted that show. I'll never forget that night. But go back. What do you remember about that night, that last show? Because sadly, he died a very short time after that night.
I remember putting together that show to help celebrate the Second City's 40th anniversary. And it was Avery Schreiber and Mina Kolb, both of whom were in the early Second City cast. Mm-hmm. And so they knew each other. And then I got more recent cast to play with him, which was Scott Adsit, which is, again, part of that one of many things he said he has been so helpful to. And then Rachel Dratch was going to do it, but she wasn't able to do it. So her replacement was just some nobody named Tina Fey.
Yeah.
You know,
really?
You got to get somebody.
You're right. Yeah. You know? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then Tina Fey, Scott Adsit, Mina Kolb, and Avery Schreiber improvised together. And it was like two different generations that, you know, because there was like a 30-year age gap. And watching the four of them improvise together was just magical.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments that just gave me chills. And that whole festival, we're at the Athenaeum Theater, which is such a gorgeous theater. Mm. And Avery was there for every show, sitting up in the Queen's box, watching every group.
And loving it.
And he would wave to them. And it was like, he was like the improv pope, benedicting everybody, like, yes, you are blessed. Go make magic. Be funny. I see you. And they'd be like, Avery, he'd be like, I see you. So in some ways, it made sense to me that he passed on shortly after that. And I'm like, look at what he finished with.
Yeah.
You know?
Went out on a big game, didn't
he? Right. Yeah. So, and Bill was the MC for that. And
it was a fun night.
Yeah.
Really fun night.
And Dan Harmon getting a lot of love on texting on our text lines. And my son just texted me, Rick and Morty, Mom. How could you not know who that is? Sorry. I do love that show.
Harmontown, Rick and Morty. Yes.
Jonathan, very weird.
Yes.
Very strange, but very funny.
Yes.
You've told Wendy and I privately, not on the air, but you're going to go teach around the world. You've been asked to teach improv. Whenever you're in town, open door, whenever you want to stop by, we would love to have you.
But great.
Thank you for bringing this to Chicago for the past 20 years. You've put us on the map improv-wise with this, and I know you're going to do well in whatever you do.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Bill, and it's always great to be here with you guys because you're always so wonderful.
Thank you.
Your baby's grown up.
Get your own place.
Jonathan Pitts, everybody. You. The Chicago Improv Festival, and for tickets again, Jonathan.
ChicagoImprovFestival.org.
Just that simple. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
A little break, and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If at any point during today's show you would like to reach us with a question or a comment, or a recipe. Let's say you have a recipe.
I need a new recipe.
Sourdough bread, and you want to share it with us. 312-981-7200.
You know, the DJ in me is coming out, because when I heard ZZ Top's cheap sunglasses, I was all ready to go, you don't need any cheap sunglasses today. You're not going to need them. Or hope you didn't spend a lot of money and you got some cheap sunglasses, because you're not going to need them today. Right. God, my old J-days.
Van Halen is next on WGN. Like that. And then we just go into a Van Halen song. That would have been great.
Are you hot for teacher?
Right. You should have done that. All right. Speaking of teachers, Wendy, over in North Carolina, every year they do Child Abuse Prevention Month, in which they select books for their students. And they read them, and then the students have a little better understanding of various things having to do with child abuse.
And I believe when that comes out in the open like that, more kids are apt to tell a teacher or a counselor,
without question,
hey, you know what? I'm recognizing some of this stuff to be true.
It is such a good idea for exactly that reason, because I'm sure a lot of kids that are abused in various ways think, I'm probably the only one going through this,
right.
But all of a sudden there's a book about it. And it opens up a lot of fields of communication, and that's a good thing. Well, in North Carolina, they have chosen the books that they will be doing for Child Abuse Prevention Month in April. And they made a selection on one, and then they got a lot of negative feedback, so they have dropped the book. The book is called Jacob's New Dress, and it is about a boy, a little boy, Jacob, obviously, who is comfortable wearing a dress. So the plan was to read this, have all the kids read it, and then discuss it. And too many people were ruffled by this, so that book has been pulled.
Can I tell you, there are many Jacobs out there that have a new dress that get teased constantly.
Sure.
So this is a perfect opportunity to get it out in the open,
right,
and let all the Jacobs out there with their new dresses feel like, wow,
yeah,
I can relate. It's not just me.
Yeah.
What is wrong with trying to help people?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. Now, I'll read you the story, but both you and I have discussed this off air. Our children know people, know kids in their school who sometimes dress as the opposite sex.
Or are still girls and boys, but identify with the opposite and say, you know, like I could say all of a sudden, start calling me Wendell.
Right.
I want to identify as a boy.
Right.
Which I'm 50-50. Sometimes I like to be boyish.
Sure.
Sometimes I like to be girlish.
Sure. Now, would you agree that your children, I know it's a fact for my daughters, that your boys, they don't look at these kids any differently.
Nope.
It's just accepted at this point.
And they call them by the new name they want to be called.
Right, right.
Don't even bat an eye.
Don't you think we go back one generation to when you were in school and I was in school? That would have played out very differently back then, wouldn't it?
Yes, and a lot of it was, I guess there were people like Jacobs that had new dresses, but they kept it quiet, and it wasn't part of everyday life. Ignorance sometimes causes being rude.
Right. So we've come, I think, we have gone a long way in 30 or 40 years. A pair of children's authors is firing back after a North Carolina school district scrapped plans to incorporate their book about a gender nonconforming boy into its anti-bullying curriculum. Charlotte Mecklenburg school administrators have been planning to use the book, Jacob's New Dress, the one we just described, about a young boy who likes to wear dresses in first grade classes as part of their Child Abuse Prevention Month. It takes place in April. On Friday, however, just this past Friday, Superintendent Ann Clark told the New York Times that the 2014 book has been replaced due to some concerns, that's in quotation marks, about the content of the book. Michael Hall's book, Red, a Crayon Story, which follows a blue crayon misidentified with a red label, will be read instead.
I see where they're going with this.
Similar
kind
storyline.
Kind of the same thing, but not really. How can a kid identify with a crayon?
Well, I think if you're them, what you say is, we are giving in to the parents' concerns that maybe it's hitting just a little too close to home to have it be a little boy. But if you have a crayon, it's the same message. It's a blue crayon that's more comfortable wearing a red label. So it's the same message. But what you're saying to those parents is, we understand your concerns, and we're giving in to those concerns. We're still teaching our lesson, but we're doing it in a more abstract way, you know? So maybe that's better. And I know that there's people, I'm positive, I haven't even looked at the calls
yet.
I'm positive there's people that go, first grade, way too young to know this. But is it?
I got to tell you, when one of my kids was going to home, Dylan, he was going to home daycare at a house, and there was a little girl who had two dads.
Yeah.
And he would say, oh, yeah, so-and-so's two dads came to pick her up. Oh, they're such a cute family. I mean, it was just
perfectly acceptable.
And that's before school. That's before kindergarten.
Right.
So when is it too early? Kathy, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, sorry, I'm driving in the rain, so... But
be
anyways,
careful.
I know. Okay, in this age where we feel like the schools aren't doing a good enough job at the basics, right?
Yeah.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic, why are they branching out into all this stuff that, as parents, we should be doing? And I did.
And you're right, that does fall on the parents, but don't you agree that there's a lot of bullying going on in schools, and perhaps they're trying to make the bullying go away?
Yeah, but then we could have the story about the fat person, and we could have the story about the person with the freckles, and the person with the red hair, and the, I mean, you know, the person with the alopecia, the person, I don't know where it stops. And all I want my child to do is get a good education, and I'm hearing from the Chicago school system that they're not. So I don't know why we're spending all this extra time. I don't know.
Because...
And I'm very liberal because I understand. I was heavy when I was a kid. I was teased relentlessly. Absolutely relentlessly. And I was the only Presbyterian in an all-Catholic school, for goodness sake.
But, Kathy, I think the teasing is way worse now than when we went to school.
I know with social media, I know I have two daughters that teach, and social media is awful. It's awful, especially in high school.
Kathy, can I add something else? I think you also run the risk of having a lot of parents say, no, a boy in a dress is not okay. I don't care what they're telling you in school. That's not okay. That's freakish. That should not be going on. So I think the school is trying to jumpstart that a little bit to say to the kid, look, even though you're in first grade, you got to know you're going to encounter some kids who are more comfortable this way, and why not accept them?
I know. And then I don't know. I know because I feel that way myself. I feel like I'm very holistic in my thoughts, but then I also feel like there's a point that I don't want people teaching my kids some morals. Where does it stop? Because I think I'm pretty liberal in
right.
those areas.
Yeah.
But where does it stop? I mean, I'm the parent. I want a parent. And I feel like that is taking the parenting role away from the parent.
Sure.
But Bill, I understand what you're saying. It's a difficult topic. I agree. I mean, I know, but then it's like, where does it end?
But maybe first grade, I don't know if you'd learn sociology in first grade, but you do learn that as you grow older. And I think the general academic study involves how you deal with other people. So, I mean,
yeah.
In a way, they are, you know, school is not just reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's life, too.
Yeah.
Well, we have to run for a commercial, but Kathy, we really appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you. We love you back.
Thanks, Kathy.
Have a great weekend. All right. There's plenty of people on the line who want to discuss this. We're at 312-981-7200. Stay there. We're going to get to you right after these messages. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. Let me quickly catch you up. First graders in a North Carolina school district are being denied a reading of the book Jacob's New Dress. It's a story about a little boy, Jacob, who is comfortable wearing a dress. The North Carolina School District is scrapping plans to incorporate the book into their anti-bullying campaign because people were a little bit upset. Due to some concerns about the content of the book.
And they've replaced it with Michael Hall's Red, a crayon story, which follows a blue crayon misidentified with a red label that would be red instead.
Yeah.
Same idea, but kids know they can see beyond a crayon.
Sure. Well, hopefully, yeah.
I mean, I think...
You're hoping.
And again, it's a matter of opinion, and Chris has an opinion, and Chris has called us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys doing? Long-time listener. I haven't really ever called in before, but
Thank
what
you,
you're
Chris.
Talking about today really touches home with me.
And how does
why?
It?
Okay, I'm going to use the anonymity of the radio and calling into your show to relate to you a personal story, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
My daughter is currently a freshman in high school, and she's 14 years old, and she's transitioning.
And she, can I tell you, Chris, she's not the only one. and people don't understand it. Did you understand it at first?
She came out to my wife first because she was afraid to come out to me, but I do understand it.
And you know it's not just an act, and you know that this is something she feels in deep inside.
Yes, it affects her. It affects her physically on a physical level in all aspects of her life. And I also have a nephew who, when he was younger, used to spend the night at our house. And the story about Jacob likes to dress really touches home with me too, because it's my brother's son. And when he spent the night with us, he wanted to wear my daughter's dresses, and we let him. And everybody thought it was funny of us to do that. And my wife is a big believer. She's not a, you know, she's not one to be on the air or doesn't want to put our personal stories out there and stuff like that. But she is a big supporter and a huge supporter of all of this. And with what my daughter's going through right now, you guys are touching on such a personal subject to me. I just felt like I had to call in.
Chris, can I ask you, I'm sure your daughter has been through a lot with this transitioning process, but are you seeing more acceptance than you would have seen a generation ago when any of us were in school? Are you seeing more acceptance?
For sure, for sure. And I live in southern Wisconsin, right on the Illinois border. And within this community, there is a huge community of people that talk about identifying as different gender pronouns, and they are young, and they're junior high kids, and there is a definite clique of those kids. So they have support within their own community, but they still are being harassed by the school district, by like people like Betsy DeVos' policies, and by what's going on in North Carolina right now, and those kind of things.
Chris, you call saying that your daughter is in a similar situation as this Jacob's nude dress. Do you agree with the school administration putting this book in their curriculum?
Yes, I do.
I know it, you know, we've getting a lot of texts that say this is the parents' job, but really, when we're in elementary school, that's when we learn everything: reading, writing, spelling, arithmetic, and learning how to deal socially with other people. A lot of difference between a kid who goes to school and a homeschooled kid. Nothing wrong with it, other than they're introduced to being socially aware more than a homeschooled kid. So I don't know if this is taking the place of parenting, but it, in my opinion, it certainly needs to be discussed.
Yeah, I feel like we're going down a slippery slope with Betsy DeVos, because I know that, you know, if she has her way, all of this, I know with it, just my own local school district, teachers are leery of talking about any social issues within school. Now, the guidance counselor is a different story, but even she has limitations on her hands right now. And, you know, I've been following politics for, you know, long my life, but I, you know, later in life, I've been getting more involved now. And I remember Hillary Clinton's It Takes a Village, you know, when she was the first lady. And I think that we should all give that ideology another look.
I completely agree with you, and I thank you so much for sharing your story, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate it.
Good luck with everything.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I think so many people, and we, you know, we've discussed this in the past, so many people who have kind of put up a wall to issues like this and have very serious beliefs that this is so deviant and so unacceptable. I think if you know somebody going through this, especially if it's in your own family, you understand it. It's not that crazed. It's not that deviant, you know?
How many politicians, and forgive me for not knowing names, but they were totally against gay rights and everything, and then their child comes out, and then all of a sudden it's like...
Well, Dick Cheney's a good example.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly when it was known that his daughter was gay, but I know that... although not a champion for gay rights, he was much more accepting once his daughter came out. So, you know, the progress is being made. I mean, there's no doubt about it. As Chris just said, his daughter has had a lot of acceptance, which is so encouraging to hear.
And Donna, this sounds very interesting. We had mentioned that they have pulled this North Carolina school district. They pulled Jacob's nude dress and put read a crayon story in its place. You've read that book to your grandkids?
I have. And a couple of things. The interesting thing is I was in education for 30 years. And the sad thing is there's a lot of parents out there who do not talk to their children about that. So that's one thing that's going on. But the other thing is I've read that book. So when you mentioned it to, and, you know, when they were 5, 6 years old. And when you mentioned it, I, as a 65-year-old, didn't get that message.
Really?
Yeah, so
wow.
I'm not sure how children would get that message, especially at that age.
Do you think, Donna, though, then the teacher needs to say, look, even though in the book we're talking about crayons, the reality is we're not. We're talking about people. Does the teacher have the wherewithal to do that or not, do you think?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure how much they can, you know, really do, since the parents are being so, I mean, because obviously if you have a book that says, and I'm not sure if it was Jason wears
a dress. Jacob's new dress.
Jacob's new dress. I mean, that's pretty clear what the message is there. So I'm not sure how much they have. And, you know, certainly there would be a lot of other things. But that's an interesting, I'll have to read it again because I didn't get that message.
And also, you know, and I do agree with parents who say, I don't know if I want the school tapping on my parental toes. This is something I'd like to discuss at home. But in my opinion, if that's read at school and then a kid comes home and says to their mom and dad, we read this new book today, Jacob's New Dress. I've got a lot of questions. What are your thoughts on this? To me, that opens up the lines of communication.
Right. And the fact that they know that this is happening, I think that that's something that, you know, you should even be proactive about it and talk to them about it, you know, read the book. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who don't even want to touch this at home. So they obviously, you know, aren't getting it. So, and it goes back to the business about bullying. So that's what, you know, that's the whole thing should be, go back to the bullying issue and stuff like that. So that's all part of it.
It is, isn't it? Donna, thank you so much for the call. Have a great weekend.
Hey, Bill, just to go along with what you guys have been talking about, there has been some movement on this bathroom law in North Carolina.
Oh, really?
I'll have more about it coming up in news because I know you're about to hit the break. But just to give you a little tease, the Senate has voted on it. So
excellent.
To let you know.
Interesting. Thank you, Kim. Good timing. All right. So we will take a break. And then Kim with the news coming up very soon. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys, Dean.
We should throw Dean for a loop or throw a loop at him and talk about some porn.
Loop me.
Dean, would you be comfortable just reviewing the porn films that the kids are into, the dirty films?
Does it have anything to do at all with Jay Cutler's photos?
It could.
Yeah.
Yes, it could. It's a full moon, Dean.
Oh, you're telling me.
Oh, boy.
Did you hear what Conan said?
No.
Last night about the photo? There have probably been about, 500 jokes about the nude photo that Kristen Cavallari posted on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly Jay Cutler nude. Last night Conan said the last thing that Bears fans need is to see another Jay Cutler sack.
Oh, I love it.
That's good stuff.
That is so funny.
That's very funny.
That is hilarious.
Very funny.
There's my first porn review.
Yeah, excellent. It's in the bank. Okay, a couple of questions before we get to this week's movies. Question number one, I'm sure you're up on this. Disney revealed yesterday that the ending of Frozen is very different from the original ending they had intended, right?
Yes, yes. Turns out that the movie was going to be a super dark. It had a few little elements of it, but apparently Elsa was going to be just a full, straight-out, wicked Snow Queen with an army of snow monsters that attacked her foes and, launched avalanches on people that she didn't like. What was it, Anna? Anna and Elsa,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Apparently, originally in the first treatment of this, they were not sisters. They were not royalty from this kingdom. The whole movie was going to have a much darker sort of diabolical tone to it all. And they worked on it. They decided that wasn't the best way to go with this story. I think probably good that they didn't. And, left us with the Frozen song, Let It Go, that I know parents can't get enough of.
Right.
Parents cannot hear enough of that song.
Right. It is still, I didn't know this until recently, but of all the animated films that have ever been made, it is the number one money making film of all time in animation, right?
Really? I didn't know that. It's got a good runner up with Beauty and the Beast that's mm-hmm. already, you know, taken in it's close to $3 billion that it's taken in worldwide so far.
Now, can I ask you, when a movie like that makes that kind of money, there is no sequel story already in place for Beauty and the Beast. I know they did like a made-for-video sequel Disney did years and years ago, but are they quickly going to get together some sort of a sequel to capitalize on this? They'd have to, right?
I got to think that they're, you know, that they would, you know, certainly would like to capitalize either with the sequel or maybe some kind of prequel. Or, you know, maybe, you know, some kind of spinoff. They've done that with the Frozen characters. They've done these little kind of mini movies, little spinoff things with Olaf the Snowman and, you know, some of the other characters. Ironically, Josh Gad, you know, who is the voice of Olaf and the voice of Le Fou mm-hmm. in Beauty and the Beast. He's the one that's apparently turning everybody gay and around the world right now with that little 2-second scene.
Yep.
So they have not confirmed anything that there's going to be any more Beauty and the Beast, but I'd be completely shocked if they didn't parlay that into two, three more projects along the way. And rightfully so. If it's done as well as this one, I hope they do.
I can't stop looking at Jay Cutler's butt. I'm sorry. I really can't. It's pretty lovely.
I wondered why you had gone so silent.
Well, you know, I hadn't seen it when you guys started talking about it.
You had not seen that picture, really?
No.
Ooh.
I missed out on a lot.
So what's your take on it?
It's a nice looking
let
butt.
It go,
made it your screensaver.
Let it go.
I did make it my screensaver. I'm not even kidding. You have Mark Carman as a little boy.
Yes,
I have Jay Cutler's butt. Butler.
Yeah.
It just looks funny that he has his watch and a bracelet on.
It's weird that he's wearing nothing except some accessories.
Well, you want to know what time it is,
that
Dean.
We know of.
Even when you're walking around naked, it's important to be conscious of the time, isn't
promptness,
it?
Promptness. When naked, promptness is very important. Maybe more important when you're naked.
Yep.
You don't want to be late for something. If you're standing around, you just happen to be standing outside of your house naked, looking endlessly. I'm not even sure what he was looking at, but he was looking at it very intently. And then suddenly you realize, oh, wait a minute. I have to get downtown.
Yes.
You need your watch on.
Because
now you got to figure, do I put my clothes back on to drive downtown? Or do I just take a chance and drive downtown?
I say put the clothes on because you'll stick to the seat.
Nobody wants that. Well, even worse in the summertime. But really, who wants to be naked in a car when it's a little chilly and damp outside, too?
Wendy has, I was kidding earlier, Dean, but Wendy has made it her screensaver.
My wallpaper.
Yep.
His butt is
Well, the whole lovely picture. The ocean looks so lovely.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you do love oceanography.
Dean, I'm concerned for Val Kilmer. Are you also concerned for him?
What's wrong?
Have you been reading his stories?
I have not.
He keeps writing weird stuff about how much he loves Cate Blanchett. And a lot of people do. She's a great actress. But he's getting weird. He just keeps writing stories about his love for her. And she's married to somebody.
Yes. He said that he wrote nice things about Cate Blanchett on Twitter, and apparently now people are saying that he's a pervert.
Right.
As a result of that, he said, I don't know why loving an actor that's so talented is creepy, but he adds, I guess I'm creepy.
Well,
I'm not going to question the man.
No, if you admit it,
somebody
that's the first
says
step.
Somebody says about themselves that you're creepy. I'm not getting involved in the middle of that.
Absolutely.
He says, I know that it makes no sense, but I didn't say anything weird.
All right.
Now, have you? I've
read some of the notes. He talks about at one point he set up a meeting. He wanted to meet her, and instead of her showing up, her husband showed up, and he called it a very unsatisfactory meeting.
Yeah, I can see where that would be. Clothed or unclothed?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
It does not say. And then also, I don't know if you have any inside information about this, but I was reading about this last night, and I also find this a little bit disturbing. they did a reunion picture. They had almost everybody from the cast of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. They all got together. But apparently Janet Hubert, who played Aunt Viv on the show, does not like Will Smith at all. So she's been writing some very nasty things again.
Apparently there's no love lost between Aunt Viv and most everybody on that show, from the way that I understand it.
Yeah.
And when I originally saw the picture, I was not surprised that she was not in it, because she's had sort of public falling out with nearly everybody on that show. So they'd gotten together. It was a big charity event that was going on. They all just happened to be there. It's not leading up to a Fresh Prince reunion. We should only be so lucky in this world,
right,
to have something that would be so high quality.
Yes.
Somebody took a picture of Will Smith lately, and he looks a lot like Uncle Phil.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's aged a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looking a lot like Uncle Phil. Actor James Avery, who passed away a few years ago.
Yeah.
Turns out he was not available for the photo.
Him not being around. Right. Yes. Yes.
You guys are mean. You're bullies.
No, yeah, we're just saying.
Look at your picture. Never mind.
I am.
Check out the left bun a little bit more.
It's got a perfect butt, I got to tell you.
Dimples? I didn't look as carefully as you are. Would you say dimply?
No.
How would you describe it?
Smooth and contoured.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like his passing routes. Is that Jay Cutler or Warren Moon? I can't tell. Doesn't matter. We'll take a quick break. Dean Richards is with us. He'll tell you what weekend movies are coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking to Dean Richards, our favorite guy.
You're our favorite guy, Dean.
And I'm your favorite.
Yes.
That's what we just said.
It's all equal.
No, I meant the other way.
Oh,
all right. All right, thank you.
No, I did. I am also my favorite,
Oh,
too.
Well, it works out for everybody.
Yeah. Everybody's, win-win.
Yep, everybody wins.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ghost in the Shell. What do we need to know?
Oh, boy.
That doesn't sound encouraging.
Is this Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah.
That looks kick-ass. I'm sorry.
Not really? Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
She looks kick-ass.
She does look kick-ass. I will give you that much. She looks fantastic.
What went wrong with this?
Well, some people are loving it. Some people are... It's a remake of a 1995 anime. So I think the people who are really loving this are fans of that original anime. And they seem to be connecting with this film in a way that just absolutely did not register with me whatsoever. I found it boring and pretentious, and an uninteresting story, an unengaging story, but one that is visually amazing. I can see where if you're taking an anime film and using that as your source material and converting it into visually what this movie is, extremely, extremely high-tech, extremely special effects, extremely, sort of modern, ultra super modern in every possible way. I can see where you might be dazzled by that. And honestly, that's my least favorite thing in a movie. I always tend to be more of a story person than a style person. And to me, this movie is all style, ultra style, beautiful style, but left me really flat when it came to the story with this. And the story is about this woman who was in a tragic accident. Everything on her body was destroyed except her brain.
Mm-hmm.
And they created a high artificial intelligence body for her, into which her human brain was attached, and she becomes a crime fighter to wipe out the kind of crime that almost killed her, that is wiping out the scientists that have created this kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
I never got the feeling from this movie of that there was, you know, any sort of crises. I felt like it was just sort of disoriented. Everything was based on cool visual things happening. And I never engaged with this. I never, you know, they try to make a connection and try to humanize Johansson's character in this movie. I think they fail. Maybe if you know the incredible backstory with this from the original source material, maybe you'll engage better. You know, maybe it's one of these cases where this is really an insider's movie. Like, you really have to know the 1995 original version of this in order to fully appreciate this movie. If that's the case, I take points off for that, too. You shouldn't have to be familiar with other source material in order to, you know, if you're going to go spend $14, $15, $20 to see a movie, you should be able to see the movie, and it should be standalone. It should make sense by itself. And I just could not have been more bored during this movie. I'll honestly, as I say, the only thing that I can give this points for is its visual style and its look. And the best that I can give it, even for that, is Dean's List D.
Oh, that's not good. Wow. That's not good.
Pretty disappointing. And there are plenty of points where Scarlett Johansson looks like she's naked in this movie.
Right.
With that skin-tight outfit.
I want to get one like that.
You should wear that outfit.
For Bill.
Wendy. Oh, for me? I would wear that.
Could look like Cutler.
All right.
That would look sharp in the showcase studio.
I would love that. Dean, can I ask you a question? I've only seen the trailer, but her character, Scarlett Johansson's character, keeps jumping off of things, buildings and bridges and stuff. Don't they have escalators in the future?
Apparently, they have every other thing where you can walk through walls and, you know, do all kinds of other things.
But to get down, you need to jump off of something.
Well, you need to. Let's say you're on the third floor of a building.
Yeah.
You got to go all the way to the roof.
And jump off.
You got to go to the roof, get outside. It's not always easy to get outside on the actual roof of a building just to jump off.
Right.
So you can get down to the main. Hey, there's a Good Humor truck down there. I better jump off so I can
seems impractical.
Get down there right away.
Well, I hope
there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
There seriously is.
That's too much.
A lot of unnecessary, super crazy, high-tech, just for the sake of being super high-tech.
Yeah.
It didn't make one bit of sense to me. This is not my favorite genre of movie,
no.
I will admit. But this one, you know, usually I can follow them.
And yeah,
I can make sense of it. This one, I just could not have been more bored with this.
All right, Ghost in the Shell only getting a D, and we only have a couple minutes, but I know Boss Baby, I know that cheered you up, right, Boss Baby?
Boss Baby was surprisingly entertaining.
Oh.
I'm not going to say it's my favorite animated movie of the year by any stretch. I'm not going to say that this one has got a wide appeal like some do that will please, you know, that the parents are going to be just as entertained as the mid-aged kids versus the younger ones.
Yeah.
I think this one is a little more strictly for the little kids. It's the story about a new baby who has come from a baby corporation introduced into the family and is trying to create a little bit of a conflict between older brother and parents and these corporations. One corporation is for the cuteness of puppies, and one corporation is for the cuteness of babies.
Mm-hmm.
It's pleasant enough. It's a nice enough story, but I think little kids, 10 years old, 10 and under, probably are the best recipients for this. The writing is okay. The acting is okay.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. I gave it a Dean's List C.
Are there any scenes that will turn you gay, like in Beauty and the Beast?
No.
Scenes like that?
I will give it points for that. No, I did not. I was looking around because I do the... Now, I never even really paid attention to that before when I was... I've been reviewing movies for a long time, but now I hurry to the door, and as people are leaving, I ask them, have you turned gay? Have you turned gay? Have you turned gay? I check everybody. I ask everybody if they've turned gay with anything that's happened in the movie. And so far, since the Beauty and the Beast, I've not had, I didn't actually have anybody tell me they turned gay with that one either.
What?
But I'm checking from now on because
we
can't be too careful in America
so
anymore.
So true. So true.
Thank you, Dean.
Dean, thank you so much.
Enjoy your buttocks.
I am.
That's a weird way to close out an interview, but enjoy yours too.
Thank you.
All right. That's Dean Richards, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's on the Winchester Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.